Eric Richens was found dead in his own bed on the morning of March 4th, 2022, in the Francis, Utah home he shared with his wife and five children. The cause of death was fentanyl poisoning. His blood contained a concentration of the drug that toxicologists would later describe as five times a lethal dose. There was no fentanyl found anywhere in that house. No pills, no residue, no prescription, no explanation for how a drug powerful enough to kill a man five times over moved through his bloodstream and left no physical trace in the home where he died. That is the first contradiction this case hands you, and it will not be the last. What investigators would eventually piece together over the next 4 years is a story that begins with a cocktail, travels through a forged insurance document, passes through a children's grief book, published while a murder investigation was quietly building steam, and ends in a Summit County courtroom where a jury took less than 3 hours to convict Corey Richens of murdering her husband. The aggravated murder charge carries a sentence of 25 years to life. Sentencing is scheduled for May 2026. This case is not famous because of what happened in that bedroom. It is famous because of what happened after. Within months of Eric Richens' death, his wife self-published a children's book titled, Are You With Me? A guide for children grieving the loss of a parent. She gave interviews. She positioned herself as a mother processing tragedy through the page. She was, at the same time, the subject of a developing homicide investigation. The book would eventually be read aloud in its entirety by prosecutors during her arrest hearing. The passage about telling children a loved one is never truly gone was read into the court record by the very people charging her with his murder. That is the trap in this case. Not a single moment, not a single mistake, but a documented pattern of decisions that, when assembled in sequence, pointed in one direction. I want to walk you through what the record shows, because the record here demands to be understood in full. Eric Richens was 39 years old. He was a real estate developer and businessman in the Park City area of Summit County, Utah. By accounts accessible through the court record, he was a father of five who had built a life alongside Corey, whom he had married years before his death. The marriage, based on court documents, was complicated. There were financial disputes. There were disagreements about control over real estate assets. What prosecutors established through documentation was that Corey had, over time, positioned herself as the primary beneficiary of a series of life insurance policies taken out on Eric. At least one of those policies, worth $100,000, was allegedly signed not by Eric Richens, but by Corey Richens, who prosecutors said had forged his signature. That is where the financial picture begins. It does not end there. On the morning, Eric was found dead. Real estate transactions were waiting. The day after he died, according to prosecutors, Corey moved to close a multi-million-dollar real estate deal, signing documents to take control of a property. Investigators would later frame this not as grief-stricken confusion, but as intentional financial positioning, executed within hours of a man's death. But the detail that entered this case and refused to leave, the thread I kept returning to as I went through the record, was the fentanyl itself. Not just that it was in his system, the concentration was extraordinary, five times a recognized lethal dose. Yet when investigators searched the home, they found nothing. The drug that killed Eric Richens was, in physical terms, nowhere. A source for that fentanyl had to exist. That question sat at the center of this investigation for years, and the answer, when it emerged, would come from a place that connected back to Corey Richens directly. There was also the matter of Valentine's Day. February 2022, approximately 3 weeks before Eric died, court testimony established that Eric became severely ill after eating a bagel sandwich prepared at home. He blacked out. He recovered. At the time, no one connected it to fentanyl. By the time investigators looked back, they would argue that what happened on Valentine's Day was not food poisoning. It was, they alleged, a failed first attempt. The investigation following Eric's death was not immediately public. What detectives from the Summit County Sheriff's Office were doing in the months after March 2022 was building a chain from the toxicology results backward toward a source. Fentanyl, at that concentration, does not enter a person's body by accident in a home where none is present. That basic forensic logic drove the early investigative direction. A housekeeper connected to the Richens household became central. Her name, as it emerged through court proceedings, was Carmen Lauber. What prosecutors established was that on the day Eric Richens died, a jail call captured her boyfriend, stating that she had just made money selling fentanyl. The timing and the connection placed her within a documented supply chain that led, according to the prosecution, directly to Corey Richens as the buyer. To be precise about what the record establishes, what was argued at trial and accepted by the jury was that Corey Richens obtained fentanyl, that the fentanyl ended up in Eric's system in a lethal concentration, and that she administered it. The mechanism the prosecution described was a cocktail, a drink prepared and delivered to Eric Richens on the night of March 3, 2022, before he went to bed. He was found dead the following morning. The absence of fentanyl in the home was addressed by the lead detective during cross-examination. Defense attorneys argued that the missing drug was a flaw in the state's case, a gap that pointed away from certainty. Detective Jeff O'Driscoll responded with language that stayed in every account of this trial. He said, and I am quoting from reported courtroom testimony, that there was a boatload of fentanyl in Eric's stomach that came out of the house with him. The drug left the house inside the victim. That was the investigative answer to the absence of physical trace evidence. Alongside the toxicology and the fentanyl source, prosecutors built a financial architecture, the insurance policies, the forged signature, the real estate maneuver executed within 24 hours of Eric's death. Each element, the prosecution argued, pointed to a premeditated plan in which Eric Richens had to die for Corey Richens to access what she wanted financially. Prosecutors said she wanted to be, in the words attributed to the digital evidence recovered from her phone, really rich. That phrase came from a meme. On the morning Eric was found dead, at 8:29 a.m., phone activity was recorded on a device in the home. Investigators found that among the content accessed were memes, including one referencing extreme wealth. The defense challenged this evidence directly, noting that investigators could not confirm who was actually holding the phone at that moment. That is an accurate statement of the evidentiary limitation. Prosecutors included it, nonetheless, as part of a documented behavioral pattern surrounding the death. The trial began on February 23, 2026, in Summit County. Over 13 days of testimony, prosecutors called 42 witnesses. The defense called none. When it came time for the defense to present its case, attorneys announced they were resting without putting a single witness on the stand. Corey Richens formally waived her right to testify. Whether the decision reflected a strategic confidence that the prosecution had failed to meet its burden, or a calculation that no witness could help more than hurt, the defense did not explain their reasoning beyond the courtroom record. What the record shows is that the jury heard 42 prosecution witnesses and zero defense witnesses before being asked to decide. The digital evidence became one of the most closely examined categories at trial. The phone activity on the morning of Eric's death was challenged on the grounds of unconfirmed user identity, but the broader digital picture, the insurance searches, the financial research, the documented communications about the policies, contributed to a pattern the prosecution framed as planning, not coincidence. The jail call capturing a reference to fentanyl sold on the day of Eric's death was a document the defense could not make disappear. What they could do and did was argue that proximity is not proof, and that the chain from that call to the drink handed to Eric Richens was inferential, not direct. In closing arguments, the defense's lead attorney argued that every piece of prosecution evidence had another reasonable explanation, and that the standard for conviction required eliminating reasonable doubt, not constructing a plausible story. The prosecution, in rebuttal, walked the jury through each piece of evidence, not in isolation, but as a connected sequence. The Valentine's Day poisoning attempt, the fentanyl supply chain, the financial motive, the forged signature, the real estate move, executed within 24 hours of death, the phone activity, the morning, the body was found. When the jury came back, the deliberation had lasted less than 3 hours. The verdict was unanimous across all five counts. Corey Richens, was convicted on March 15, 2026, 5 felony counts, aggravated murder, attempted aggravated murder for the Valentine's Day poisoning, 2 counts of insurance fraud, and forgery. The aggravated murder conviction carries a mandatory minimum of 25 years, with the possibility of life. Sentencing is scheduled for May 2026. 5 children lost their father in March 2022. What they were told in the days after, what they understood across the 4 years this case moved through the investigative and legal system, and what the coming years will require of them, is not captured in the court record in any detailed form. It is, however, the part of this case that does not resolve with a verdict. The Grief Book, Are You With Me?, remains part of the documented record of this case. The author is now a convicted murderer. A children's book written in the aftermath of a killing, the author committed became, in the end, something the publishing record never anticipated when it was printed. A document about the construction of public innocence, about how a person can stand inside visible grief, while a documented chain of evidence assembles behind them. What the prosecution built was not a case anchored to a single piece of physical proof. There was no confession. There was no recorded image of the poisoning. There was no pill bottle with her fingerprints. What there was a fentanyl supply chain with documented timing, a toxicology result at 5 times a lethal dose, a prior poisoning incident that Eric survived 3 weeks before he did not, a forged insurance document, a financial architecture built around his death, and a real estate transaction executed inside 24 hours of his body being found. The jury concluded that the accumulation of those documented facts, evaluated together, left no reasonable doubt. Detective O'Driscoll's words from cross-examination stayed with me through this entire case. There was a boatload of fentanyl in his stomach that came out of the house with him. The absence of physical trace evidence in the home was, in the end, not a hole in the prosecution's case. It was an explanation the evidence itself had already provided. The question I want to leave you with is not about the verdict. The jury answered that question in under 3 hours. The question I want to leave you with is this. At what point in this documented sequence, the Valentine's Day collapse that went unexplained, the insurance policies, the forged signature, the real estate move executed within 24 hours of his death, the grief book, published while the investigation was building. At what point does the pattern become visible to the people around it? Not to the detectives, not to the jury, to the community, the business partners, the people in the same rooms with this family during those months. What detail, seen clearly, would have changed what came next?